Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up. And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And we are excited to be back with another race spotlight series. And this is where we are exploring different races that we think that you may be interested in putting on your calendar to take your next step. And who better than to be talking to the race director, or in this case, the assistant race director, to get all your questions answered.
I am super excited about this tonight. We live on the East Coast. We have been talking about races a lot, both on the East Coast and some on the West Coast and a variety of different places, but we've heard about Rocky Raccoon 100, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And when I read the race description, from the website, I had to just pause and I was like, should I just parse it and give just a little bit of the details? But no, I'm going to read it to you so you can kind of get the full gist of this, because there's parts of it that just stood out to me. And it says, the Rocky Raccoon 100 is known as the perfect trail running course for veteran runners wanting a 100 mile PR, as well as the perfect race for rookie ultra runners wanting a good setup to accomplish their goal. Expect frequent and incredible, known around the world, aid station support all day and night, generous cutoffs, a fun atmosphere for family, friends, and awaiting crew members with 5x20 mile beautiful loops. In other words, you do a 20 mile loop 5 times around a lake, over wooden bridges, and through towering East Texas trees. And get this, gently undulating trails on a bed of pine needles. It sounds like you need a pillow.
Undulating, that's a thesaurus word.
It is a thesaurus word. The race is a Western States qualifier and runners have 30 hours to complete. And it has about 2,200 feet of elevation. And like Jeremy said, today we are talking to the assistant race director, PJ Izaguirre, which I cannot say his last name. So PJ, I'm going to have you say your last name for us, and welcome to the show.
I want you to say it first again so that I can hear the, because I don't think it was close.
PJ Izaguirre.
Go for it, man.
Not bad. Either of those really weren't bad, but it's PJ Izaguirre. And the way you pronounced it first was the way my band director did for 7 years. He just is Aguirre, because it's like the second part of Maguire, you know? Funny.
And when he says race band director, he means like a rock band.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
But they're in Texas, man. Bands are big out in Texas. But all right, PJ, man, we're super excited to have you for this. Rocky Raccoon is something we've heard a lot about. We've had plenty of friends, obviously, plugged into social. You see posts coming out of there when the race is going on. So I'm going to ask this. We want to know all the tactical stuff about the race. We're going to ask those questions for the runners. But we always like to know what connects somebody to a race. So as the assistant race director, what is your favorite part about Rocky Raccoon?
Man, so I mean, I think you have to have like a good community in order to be able to do anything, regardless of what the goal is, even if it's not running related. And I actually used to just volunteer. I only became like staff or like owner of Taos Trails, or part of Taos Trails, for like the past year and a half. But I actually started several years ago, back in 2017, just as a volunteer, just running races, just helping out. And Rocky Raccoon was my first ultra. Nice. It was my day. And I was a runner in college, and it was my senior year, and I didn't run in college that year. So I was like, I'm going to be so fit. I'm training for this, and I'm going to stick with the lead pack for as long as I can, even though I've never done this. And rolled my ankle like 2 miles in. And then I was like, I'm going to stay with the pack anyway. And then like 2 steps later, rolled it again, and was miserable that first 25K. And I get to the finish line to start my second loop. But for the past 5 miles, I was like, this is torture. I'm tapping out. Like, this is so dumb. I'm hurting myself. Like, it looks like I have a tennis ball on my ankle. like, this is not good. I probably broke it. Like, and lo and behold, Chris greets me at the finish line. He's like, dude, you're doing the thing. Like, you're doing so well. Like, look at your time, blah, blah, blah. And like all the volunteers, what can I get you? Like, what do you need? Blah, blah, blah. And I was just like feeding off of that. And before I knew it, I was like 3 miles into the next loop. And I just started feeling the pain again. And I was like, oh man, like I'm like 3 miles away from the finish. And I said I was going to quit. What am I doing? You know? And then pretty much that on repeat for the next couple aid stations till I finished, you know, like, all that to say, my personal experience is what I've seen over and over again of just that support. Like, no matter what question or what goes wrong, there's a volunteer and there's staff at staff from Tejas Trails that'll help you believe in yourself to get it done.
I was going to say, I love that you got such a personal story with it. And if you guys have been plugging in on any of these race series, I hope you're starting to probably hear a theme about volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that made a big impact for you. We've talked to other race directors and, you know, volunteers seem to be kind of the heartbeat of these races. But not only that, that's how people seem to also get sucked into, you know, trying a race of their own.
Or somebody like PJ who goes into a race and they keep him from quitting the race.
That's
and
right.
He keeps him engaged and he found just huge support from him. And so he's fallen in love with the race because it helped him get through it too, which is awesome. So PJ, how long has the race been around?
This race has been around, man. So I don't know when the original guys started it, but I know it was like, I think it was before even 2000. Someone had brought a vintage shirt like last year and they're like, hey, you need to remake this design. And I was like, what? I've never even seen that. It was so cool because, the original, race director, he was like crazy in love with the Beatles. So he actually had several races at that same state park. He had like 6 or 8 of them and they were all Rocky Raccoon, like it just Rocky Raccoon of several distances. But, he started it, then Joe took it over. Joe Prusadas, who is the original owner of Tejas Trails, and then Chris took it over. And now, not that I'm taking it over, but I just helped Chris direct the race. So, yeah, 20-plus years for sure.
That's awesome. And what do you think keeps – I mean, obviously it's a Western States qualifier. We just talked about kind of the course and – from the course, it doesn't sound like it's super technical, although I believe there's some routes to watch out for if I read that right. But what do you think keeps people coming back?
Again, I think it's just support, right? Like, man, when you do anything that's difficult, like, and you have someone that like believes in you and is in your corner, and like my coach used to say this thing all the time, and it's something that I see from the top down with everyone, starting with Chris. Like, just personally, Chris has always challenged me and he's always like, hey, yeah, go do this thing. And I was like, dude, I've never done that before. He's like, oh, you got it. I know you got it. And like that kind of relationship and that leadership starting with Chris kind of just spills onto everyone. Like, we have a huge captain's meeting right before the race starts. And it's like, hey, like if a runner's acting like this, this is what you do. If their head's here, this is what you say. This is what you don't say. It's just an incredible amount of leadership and care, like intentional care, not just like, oh, like, what can I do for you? It's like, oh, what do you need? Tell me what your problems are. I'll get you the solutions. And I think everyone really feels that at our races, especially Rocky Raccoon, because there's just so much support. And again, like volunteer groups, we get like different run clubs for, to manage each station and incredible captains that, you know, just really understand what it takes and what community means to make all our runners feel that love and support, you know.
So let me ask you a quick question. It's obviously, you know, that a lot of races that have critical support and have good leadership and good organization at the top, it helps create the environment for success for a lot of runners. But if anybody's listening and they're considering coming to run Rocky Raccoon, And they're like, well, this is going to be a cakewalk. Like, I just got undulating hills to deal with some pine needles. There's not a lot of stress there. The elevation is only 2,200 feet. And yet they've got all these great volunteers and cool, you know, like I said, organization of how things are run. What though do you think they do wrong? Like, what do you think they underestimate about their experience when they come in to participate in this race? What catches them off guard that maybe they weren't expecting?
So a few things. The one thing that comes to mind is just like, man, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot by saying this, but this is just an honest answer. I think that people have maybe too much comfort. Like, we provide almost too much accessibility to aid stations for people, and a little bit too much of like, I don't know, like food, like we like everything, like you want a burger, you want some bacon with mashed potatoes, you want, like, I don't know, just like everything. And then the volunteers get really into it too, so then they'll start bringing their own food to like feed the runners. Like, it just, everyone wants to do like go the extra mile for our runners. And then sometimes I feel like, yeah, people just get comfortable, like they get too comfortable. You have to have like a really good balance and be intentional about how you're you know, resupplying yourself at aid stations. And I think that, yeah, in a weird way, it's so weird to say this, that our volunteers do too good of a job that it makes people comfortable, and then they want to tap out because they can't get themselves back out there. Or families, like, they just have so much access that they're like, oh, like, you're in pain, it's okay, like, you don't have to keep going. And it's just like, no, like, don't say that. Like, that's just what I've seen. I think that's like one challenging factor. Another challenging factor, maybe this is just me, like, whenever I start getting on a training block and I'm really trying to build up, I do a lot of out and backs, so that whatever mental challenges I'm going through, I have to take each step back. And then once I like really believe that I'm not gonna tap out, I start doing loops and being more intentional. But 5 20-mile loops, I don't think that's bad, but maybe it's not as compelling as a point-to-point might be, you know. I'm not trying to critique myself too hard on our event, because I really do think that it's a top tier, you know, event. But if I had to, like, that's like, those are two of the few things I could say about it that might be a challenge to runners.
But that's really good for runners to know. So if you're listening, again, Rocky Raccoon, very popular event. It's a qualifier. I've seen great things, but we've talked about, like we just did, Umstead, we talked about a couple of different point to point, but loops can be very good for certain reasons, but they can also be very challenging for certain reasons. And I agree that compared to, you know, Umstead's like a 12 mile, 5 20 miles, if you're hurting and you're tired and you're comfortable and you're back at the, where all the energy is, to move out on 20 miles is something I would think a runner wants to be prepared for, right? Think about how you're going to manage that, because it is different than, I just got to get through the next 6, 8, whatever miles. So we'll talk about aid stations. I'm assuming they can use some of that to break it up. Tell me about weather, because it is in February. It's in Texas. I don't always equate Texas to being cold, but man, I've seen some stuff come out of there of people freezing during that race. So what do people need to prepare for there?
I think as long as you got proper gear, because everyone thinks Texas like, how bad could it get? But I've seen guys come with like icicles on their beards. I wasn't going to mention this unless you brought up weather, but I actually, when I was volunteering at like 4 a.m., I just couldn't, like, it was about 18 degrees out and I just couldn't stay warm. So, but I also didn't want to be like a bad example. So I was like moving around, trying to resupply stuff at the aid station and then handing out buckles. And then every chance I could, I would like run over to the propane heater, like do a couple turns, get myself warm, and then start moving again, just trying not to stay cold. And there was a moment where I literally caught on fire, started burning my sleeve of my jacket. And then I was having a conversation with someone, and then she starts just smacking me. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then a guy from the other side of the aid station starts running towards me. He's like, dude, you're on fire, and starts smacking me. And even though I was on fire, I was still cold. Just by sheer dumb luck, we have had two crazy ice storms right after our event. And so we get to see all that wind and nasty rain and sleet coming in. So, I mean, just because it's Texas doesn't mean you're not going to see some harsh weather conditions with the cold. And the past 2 years, we have seen that. Before that, it's like, you know, sometimes almost ideal. Like, we almost get perfect for it. Most of the time, I think we do. You know, it's like low 50s, mid 40s, super sunny. And, you know, you don't get a lot of the wind because there's so many trees. So it's just so nice. But, yeah, like the last 2 years were brutal. So got to be prepared for both.
So I think that's the big takeaway is pay attention as you get close to race day and make sure that you're prepared for what's coming because you could probably see some swings.
Yeah, I would underestimate that myself. If I'm looking at Texas, I'm thinking it's not going to be cold. You're about to talk me out of it because it's cold.
Andy Glaze is the one I specifically remember him being like, it was cold, you know, but I think he was still in shorts.
So said in the intro, PJ, about these aid stations being world renowned, if you will, known across the world is how your website describes them. What makes your aid station so special?
So personally, I haven't done too many races outside of Texas, and I can't personally say anything about that, but I've got it over and over again from all these other ultra runners that go all across the US, all across the world, and they're like, yeah, like we're so spoiled by you guys. Like, you literally give us everything. Like, we get electrolytes, we get any type of food we want, we get salty snacks, a variety of salty snacks, we have like salt pills, and like I haven't run into someone who's asked me for something and then we didn't have some sort of supplement or something that we could provide that satisfied their need or their desire. So like, I think we've just run into so many mistakes and we've, you know, opened the board up to our volunteers and our participants on our Facebook page. We're always like, hey, like, what would make our event better? What would you like to see at an aid station as far as like snacks or as far as a supplement? And it's just a very open discussion, and it's like we're always trying to get better, so it's not like everything's set in stone with what we have at aid stations. And one thing I really do admire about Chris is that he believes in having like what the body needs, and like he's not going to put anything that's going to harm you either. Like, I'm not a big fan of energy drinks. Unless I'm on the road and I'm like dozing off, that's like the only time. But I would never want to give that to someone in a race because I don't think it's going to help them, right? And like Chris is very adamant about not having certain things at aid stations because in the long run, which is what they're doing, it's not going to be beneficial for them in any type of way. So there's a lot of consideration when we put all these things together for an aid station.
Where do you guys stand on Oreos?
We're fans. We're big fans, dude.
Perfect. That's all I needed to hear. All right, but
go ahead. I have another aid station question.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay. Just from a logistical standpoint. So I'm assuming there's the main aid station, right? How many other aid stations on the 20-mile loop, and are they as well stocked as the main one? Like you just described that. Does that describe all of them?
Yeah, they're all equally supplied. They all have the same stuff. You can get a hot meal at all of them. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4 aid stations total. So between 20 miles, you know, it's on average every 5 miles, but you know, some are shorter than others, so it's every 4 to 6 miles. I think it's 5.9 to be exact, your longest stretch. But yeah, every so many miles you get access to warm food, some ramen if you need it, some mashed potatoes, Oreos, some salt stick, V-Fuel, tailwind, whatever you need, really.
One of the questions we have about aid stations, that was, I was actually going to ask about what you just did too, but another question we get is, when we talk to some of the other races that are out there, they have certain aid stations that tend to be hotspots, if you will, for where people end up dropping. Do you happen to see that most of your drops take place though at the conclusion of the loop or somewhere out in the middle of it?
I would say right at halfway, which is the front of the park. And there's a big old parking lot there. It's super accessible. And yeah, it was back to what I was saying about families being able to see their runners. They just get so caught up. And sometimes it's not necessarily like the energy that the runner needs, you know, like
right.
Sometimes they're like changing their socks. Right. And then here comes, you know, the wife or the sister or whatever. And they see a blister the size of a grapefruit or whatever, you know, and they're like, oh my gosh, you can't be doing that. And then like, it's like, all right, you're, for one, you're not helping. And two, you're planting the seed of doubt in their mind. Right. And it's just like that no matter how small a seed is, it can grow. Right. And unless you're just like super resilient, then that can affect you. And it stinks because like our family members are the people that care most about us, but sometimes they're not the most helpful when it comes to trying to get these things done, because they kind of see it as self-harm in a way, right? They're like, what are you doing to yourself? And it's like, hey, like this is part of it. Like, and if you're not in the community, you probably just don't understand it. And if you don't have that understanding, that can lead to a lot of like problems, right? It's like, you just gotta know, right? And in those cases, like if I see that happening, I'll be like, hey, like, just so you know, that's not helping. Or like, you have to see perspective. Like, this person is going for some incredible like feat. And like, that's just the journey. Like, if there's highs and lows, your body's gonna feel like crap, your body's gonna feel great. You got to be humble enough to like oversee when it feels great, but you got to be, you know, persistent enough when you're feeling down to like say, hey, I will get past this. And it's hard enough to do that on your own, and even harder when you got, you know, tons of people around you that are saying otherwise, right? So I think, yeah, and that's roughly 10 miles into the course. So every odd number, every 10, 30, 50, so on and so forth, that people can see them.
It's the parking lot.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway though, because I would see that on a 20-mile loop. So if you're listening, it sounds like it's probably a good race where you don't have to carry too much gear if that's something you don't like, because you got aid stations every, you call it, 4 to 6 miles. Your crew has easy access, which is great, but make sure you coach them on what they should say, shouldn't say. We talk about that quite a bit on the podcast. So if you're just tuning in for the first time, you know, listen up to some of those episodes, because those are definitely, you're bringing up themes, you know, that we hear over and over. So those are great points. All right, man.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Before you go on, another thing I thought was worth mentioning is that we deliver all drop bags to all the aid stations. So, you know, whatever supplies they need for themselves, if they don't want to, they don't have to use anything from the aid station. They can completely supply themselves, you know. A lot of people go with the motto of nothing new on race day. So if you're not familiar with the items we have at our aid stations and supplements, then you definitely can, you know, use your own stuff, but we could just deliver that for you at all the aid stations. So
that's really good to know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. So people have listened right now. We've talked about the course. We've talked about the weather, the risks, you know, where they may drop, those types of things. So if they're interested now, they're like, okay, Rocky Raccoon, sounds like where I want to go. Talk through the registration process. Is there anything that we need to know? Some races sell out really fast. Some have lotteries. Tell us about your race if somebody wants to go sign up.
It's pretty easy. I mean, run sign up is the, you know, the website that we use to get people signed up, and it does sell out pretty fast. I think last year we sold out right around 2 months before the actual event, and then I would say if you're thinking about it and December rolls around and you're like, oh man, well, it's all booked up, it's sold out. We do put people on a wait list, and more often than not, our no-show rate is between 10 and 20%. So 10% of, you know, 600 people, that's 60 people not going to the race. So chances are that if you get onto the wait list, you will be able to make it in. So I haven't ever heard of someone not making it in because of so many people just not coming and stuff. But yeah, if you're going to sign up, I would say do so by mid-November. Yeah, go ahead and commit. Tell yourself you're going to do it. And then you got, you know, 2 solid months of like, hey, I'm in this thing. You're already, you know, the mindset's already there. But even then, if you're like, I don't know, have different life situations that you're trying to figure out, maybe 2 months is still too far out to figure it out. You still have a pretty solid chance of getting in, being on that wait list.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. Is there any qualifying race requirements? Like, do you have to have done a 50 mile or anything like that beforehand,
or volunteer work?
No, kind of crazy. The only thing that would stop someone from hopping in is if they're under 18.
Okay.
So we had someone or a couple people try to get in, and they just need parental consent. So it's really anybody's game. I mean, we say anyone can do it. We can, you know, support just about anyone to get it done. We've had some people do some crazy stuff. We had last year, we had a guy do it with like 0 calories. He just drank nothing but water. And it's like, you know, sometimes that scares us, but it was like, hey, dude, like, I know we can't give you any food or anything, but whatever we can do, like, let us help you. And it was crazy to watch him get it done. But
that's awesome. And I just want to make sure I'm clear. So you said under 18, they can, as long as they have parental consent?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I misheard that. I'm glad you clarified. Okay.
So, because we have had, I've had a couple people reach out that are under 18 and ask, hey, are there races or these things? You know, I think sometimes they do feel a barrier in terms of being able to get in. So that's good to know that, yes, you can, but obviously you need the parental consent. Okay. Fantastic. So we'll make sure that we got all the links in the notes for this. The race is actually February 3rd and 4th, 2024. Like I said, February, man, can be hit or miss on that weather. So I would say plan for cold and hope for perfect.
It's a good motto.
But we really appreciate you taking the time. And for everybody watching, if this is your first time coming across this, if you search Rocky Raccoon, man, I cannot say that today. It's like you with his last name, you know?
It's nothing like that.
If you're just finding us after I stumble over my words, we do have, it's the Ultra Running Guys podcast. We talk with great guests all the time. And so definitely recommend you go check that show out. We would love to serve you. And if you've been with us for a while, we appreciate you guys more than you possibly know.
PJ, thank you so much for being with us.
Man, I just really appreciate you guys. It's such a gift that you guys think of us and that, you know, we're worthy to be mentioned by you guys and just spread the word about our event.
Awesome. So appreciate. Absolutely, man. Well, like I said, I've heard so many great things. I'd love to get out there at some point. I really enjoy Texas and I want to go see that Gulf beach that you're not too far from. So, but. All right, man. Well, to the Ultra Running Guys community, we love you. Thank you so much. And PJ, you have yourself a wonderful night. And
cut. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up
clean.